Welcome to MCBI's 60 Mark, a podcast for curious thinkers.
And welcome everyone, it's Marina from 60 Mock and MCBI. It's Friday down here in the basement and I'm delighted to be sitting here next to my friend.
Well, opposite her.
Well,
but close enough.
Don't hang me out, I've just called you my friend. It's Ali Anderson, who's the manager of the outreach programs at the Australian Institute of Machine Learning. That's a fancy title.
Look, it is. It is a fancy title. Essentially, what it means is I deconstruct what artificial intelligence and machine learning means, and then I then go out and explain it to industry, to government, and to schools.
No pressure there.
Look, not really, but I think it takes... I always tell people up front that I'm a non-technical person, but I'm not running myself down. It's more of a talking myself up, because it takes someone gregarious and engaging to be able to sort of break it down a little bit and explain it.
Yeah. So what is it? I mean, there's heaps of people, you just, you know, use the
word. Well, I just said I was non-technical, but I will try to break it down for
you. We will judge you.
So people tend to, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
People tend to lump artificial intelligence and machine learning in together. Machine learning itself is actually a subset of artificial intelligence, which is fairly static, where you program something to do a task that we as humans would consider intelligent. Machine learning is slightly different. It provides systems with the ability to automatically learn and improve from experience without having to be explicitly programmed. So it focuses on the development of computer programs that can access data and use it themselves, so they can make decisions based on the data they pull themselves.
Okay.
Is that too high
level?
What's
an example? No. What's an example? So where does Siri and Google Home live?
Okay, so they live in the cloud, obviously.
In the cloud, like far away tree.
Okay, so if you look at Siri as an example, so Siri is an interactive tool, and I've got a really good story about Siri, actually, but it's probably not fit for air.
I don't know. No one listens to this anyway.
Oh, wow, that's so positive. Perhaps I'll talk to you about that after, and we can decide whether it's fit for air. So Siri, as we know, was traditionally trained on a primarily male data set, and therefore it has problems decoding female voices because they operate at a high pitch.
Yeah.
Exactly where my story as to what happened to me was leading, and I'll tell you about that afterwards. But what it's doing with all the data it picks up and learns from, it's actually, you're asking Siri a question, and that program is then going to seek the answer for itself. So the answer is not programmed into it. It's actually taking that data and going out and finding the answer to the question that you're asking. It's also learning from the voices that go into it. So it's starting to adjust its understanding. So someone might say tomato, and so the more information it's going to Siri, the more information is going to the data set, and it makes it easier, so it's able to interpret the word that you mean more easily, and that evolves with time and
so we're like all like, we're just like fancy data entry clerks, aren't we? Just like giving it, feeding the beast.
Yeah, we are.
Maybe
we
the
are.
Beast is not the right thing.
I mean,
so.
You've got tech optimism and tech pessimism, and the optimists think it's the most amazing thing that it was ever invented, and the pessimists, you know, use that to perpetuate the killer robot narrative, and it's listening and it's coming to take all our jobs and our privacy away. That's a philosophical debate we might want to explore at another time. So if I play Sudoku on my phone, which I do because I'm a nerd, that's static AI. That's not learning from itself. It's not doing anything. It's purely pre-programmed for me to put numbers in, and it will tell me that it's right. So... it's not actually challenging me. It's just doing what I'm asking it to do.
Yeah.
Whereas machine learning, Sudoku version would be right. I've worked out how you do it. I'm going to make it more difficult for you. Okay. It's probably a poor example because you don't play against someone else.
Yeah.
But
like chess.
Something like chess. Yeah, exactly. Like that. And that, you know, the grand chess master of the world was beaten by a machine learning program a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It learned from moves. It learned from people that were playing and engaging, and it actually beat a human being.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bit scary, though, like for the future? I mean, when you think that if it can outsmart and outplay...
It can, but there's a few issues with that. And, I mean, I think that's kind of where I talked about it with the
60 mock. Because you recently did a 60 mock for us, which is amazing.
Did you want to talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think you should, because you gave it.
Well, you gave me the topic. You said it'd be really cool to hear about this.
And that was the end of the instruction.
It was, will common sense be defined by robots?
Correct.
And I was like, Great. That is a very meaty topic, and I could have taken that down any number of paths. My answer, which I kind of came to in a rambling sort of fashion after 60 minutes, was no. And the reason for that is, and to answer your previous question, is that humans are unique, and the way that robots are programmed, like we as humans merge, common sense is not common for a start, but common sense is different depending on where you are, which group you're in. And one of the examples I use is, what's common sense to an African chief in the middle of the desert as opposed to common sense to an undergraduate at Adelaide Uni, and how these different things are applied is based very much on the common consciousness. It's based on the environment around you. It's based on the way that you've been brought up. It's so diverse, and you can't actually have one universal set of common sense.
Because it was one of the great philosophers who came up with that phrase, wasn't it?
Yes.
Aristotle? Or?
Yes, and I believe I've got something in here somewhere, but I'll come back to it.
That would be amazing if I could remember that.
Oh,
pull that
gosh,
out of my brain.
Robot couldn't do that. You were thinking, no, robot. Well,
robot could robot, actually.
Yeah, we'll probably go look for information and find it. But common sense, as we define it, is based on a sense of commonality. We use cognition.
Yep.
So there's different types of cognition, and the ones I kind of specifically talked about was, there's cognition as itself, but then there's behavioural cognition. So I hope I don't get fired for this, but working in an academic world, you've got people that are incredibly smart, yeah, but they're wearing odd socks, or they can't find the kitchen, or they can't balance an Excel spreadsheet. So behavioural cognition is applying intelligence and then applying common sense to that. So they're two very, very separate and distinct things.
Yeah.
The other thing we as human have is, as humans that we have are emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And emotions very much guide the decisions we make in the heat of the moment. So we, you know, crying, for example, or laughing, people cry and laugh for a multitude of different reasons. So we demonstrate and interpret emotions very differently. And that's why robots are quite linear in identifying emotion as it is, you know, as humans, that's what makes us very, very distinct. And ethically speaking, robots don't have any ethics aside from what we program into them, which places a great degree of responsibility on us as humans. You know, if you look back to Asimov, Isaac Asimov, and his three laws of robotics. Do you know about those? I think most people do.
But a lot of our listeners wouldn't, so.
No. So yeah. Asimov was an American writer and a professor of biochemistry at Boston University. He was also known for, more extensively known for his works of science fiction. So he was a prolific author as well, and any computer scientist worth their salt will know exactly who he is. Sort of terminology was his three laws of robotics, and they were introduced in his short story Runaround. And I've got them here in front of me. So one is, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey orders given to it by a human being, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. And as I explained in my talk, you can see that this fear of robot capability and what they can do and what they're going to do. And the EU actually released their laws around robotics in 2016. Australia's lagging a little bit behind. We're following the EU model at the moment, but there's extensive work going on in our country. But the EU kind of built on Asimov's work and says exactly the same things around, you know, transparency, who's responsible for that robot, who needs to program it, who pulls the pin. So we've always had this fear around what AI, machine learning, you know, will it take our jobs and will the robots come and kill us? So it's really very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that then leads to, I mean, like, the robots are in all this world, it's only ever going to be as good as the programmers or the bias that we see embedded into it. There's a lot of discussion now where we're beginning to surface some of the results of these critters, as we'll call them, but they've got embedded in bias.
Yes.
How are we going to handle that?
Well, that's interesting, and this is something I'm particularly passionate about, as you know.
That's why I asked you the question.
I actually love dropping this bias thing into conversations.
It's a big thing.
And if a conversation's boring, drop bias in artificial intelligence into a conversation and people will just fire up. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's better than how's the weather outside. as a conversation
How's your
starter.
Bias?
I think this is really important, and I think we're becoming much more aware of this as a society now. So if you look at the way that we're using AI and technology, like, it's curating our entire lives. It's all around us. The way we use social media, decision-making, health, what we buy, who we hire, who gets bank loans. We've had a chat about that, you know, the way that credit there's some eye rolls here, listeners. The way that credit card applications and bank loans, social media search engines. I have told people. I haven't told them who it was, but
I think they all do it. There is a secret calculator out there.
There is, and it's biased against women and other, you know,
and
minority
postcodes.
Yes, correct. And genders and things like that. What we're seeing is a dawning awareness of something that's been going on for ages. And these programs are being created, you know, if you forgive me being flippant but accurate, you know, predominantly by middle-aged white guys. And so everybody has unconscious and inherent biases. And the dangerous thing is, you know, they don't know that they're unconscious and they don't know that they're inherent and they don't understand that their experience is limited and they're catering to a very, very small percentage of the world's population. Now, couple that with the fact that people think that AI is unemotional and logical and makes good decisions, you know, it's just completely impartial. Well, that's completely incorrect because the integrity of the information is based entirely as to what it's programmed. So if we don't deal with this unconscious bias in people and train them and make them understand what that means and have a more diverse workforce developing this technology, then all the existing biases are just going to be reinforced in the technology. And that's a terrifying thought. And we see it already. And I can give you multiple examples.
You see it in health already, don't you?
Health. You see it in recruitment. Yeah. The Amazon recruitment model, which they scrapped silently a couple of years ago after they realised that it was screening out women completely. They invested all this time, went, well, we've got all this data from the last 20 years. We're going to use this to build this wonderful system, blah, blah, blah. And the recruiters had been middle-aged white guys. It was middle-aged white guys that created this program, and it was biased against females. So anything that mentioned girl, women, women's football team, women's college, the algorithms just didn't compute, and the resume just didn't even make it through. And they realised this. They're like, why are we getting all these men's resumes? And they're like, crap, this is why.
Because it perpetuates. But it's important to point out that a lot of this bias is not because people are evil. It's just
It's
like a natural thing, isn't
unconscious.
It? It's unconscious. It's unconscious, and we create safety by hiring or creating ourselves a little tribe around us that look and sound like ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
We just do it on a real tribal, primitive
level. We do. Yeah, reflection bias. So we want to surround ourselves with people we're comfortable with and who look like us and who are the same colour as us, you know. To be honest, we are all this way. Like, if you do the implicit association test on the Harvard website, I've done it multiple times in multiple ways, and I'm inherently biased. The difference is I'm aware of it. So I'll make an assessment and then I'll clock what that assessment is and I'll overcome that. Yep. But you have to have an awareness before you can do anything about it. So, you know, I think that's one of my big passions is...
So how are we going to do it? I mean, so that micro behaviour of self-moderating is a very human experience, a very human thing to do.
Yes.
But if we put that into a little computer that's quite binary and, you know, it's sophisticated, but it's still just taking our instruction. It doesn't have its own, I guess, its own capacity to learn in the same way a human learns. It learns in its own way. But potentially these things are going to be taking over and, you know, formulating data that people are making decisions on. And
So, well, you said medical and...
Medical, credit, access to credit, education, employment.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
All
that's
of this big stuff. Yeah.
That's
How are we going to deal with it? Any ideas?
I mean, these systems that, well, I mean, that's a very, very big question. It's a million-dollar question, or billion, multi-billion dollar
trillion.
Question, in fact. Yeah, look.
Gazillion.
Look, my work here is done. I'll see myself out. how are we going to deal with it? I think there's a couple of factors at play here. One is recognising that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And you will speak to a lot of people that are firm in their conviction that they're not biased. You know, I have gay friends, I have black friends, I have friends, like, I'm not biased. And they just flat out refuse to see that there's a problem.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of going away somewhat now with new generations coming through.
Yeah,
like, I think
I
speak to undergraduates and I do a lot of outreach in primary and secondary schools and the dialogue is changing quite a bit, which is really, really good. So I think at first you've got to get people to accept that there is a problem. Mm. Humans are humans and you have to make it relevant to them. Yeah. It's experiential, like everything else. So it's if we don't do this and the imperative, and how is this going to affect you? Like, do you want to own a house? Do you want a credit card? You know, do you want your child to be in a STEM subject? Like, what are you reinforcing? What are you stereotyping? What's being perpetuated here? Mm. And so, you know, you need to be, like I said, accepting of that behaviour and willing to understand what it is and then willing to work through that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think the workforce is still so far behind, you know.
It
is. I sit on panels and, you know, I still see the same kind of thing happening.
Just a sort of question without notice.
Here we go.
In cyber, there's this emergence of all these viruses, what have you, that are polymorphic. So they sit and behave just like real viruses, you know, icky things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the day that we might have polymorphic sort of AI and machine learning used in big institutions?
Can you give me an example?
So rather than, say in the banking sector as an example, and we know right now that if you're up in the northern suburbs and, you know, under a certain postcode, then and you want to buy a house there, because some dude or some dudette decided that would be a really rubbish place, it's harder to get a loan on there. You get scrutinised a bit more because the system
works. You're talking about the development team that creates these assessment systems?
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually quite binary. It's like a, you know, you get a scoring system that sits behind the loan assessment.
Yes, yeah.
So, but what happens, like a polymorphic to me would be, you know, the system goes away from being basically just a nice Excel spreadsheet, let's be honest, that's what it is, and instead becomes something that can feed and collect data about, you know, increasing capital value, the changes in society.
Yes.
And it becomes a bit like Hal that says, no, Hackham is the new place, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
And it takes and it synthesises that info in a different way.
So you're talking in a positive way.
It doesn't really matter because it doesn't really have judgment, does it?
Well, no. And one of the big unknown quantities and something that's very hard to quantify and is a big topic of discussion at the moment is ethics.
Yes.
Now, that's like common sense. Like, how do you quantify ethics? Again, it depends on the population, depends on your group, it depends on a whole variety of factors. And this is, as you know, like this is the topic du jour of the artificial intelligence and machine learning world and ethics. So, yes, I can see a world where this happens, both for good and bad, but what it does do is highlight to me the importance of transparent systems.
Yeah.
Because at the moment we really don't.
No.
And, you know, this particular credit union that we were talking about that has that system and provide no recourse whatsoever for people that are declined and won't explain why, and that's what we call black box AI and machine learning systems. There's no transparency. You know, you need to be able to track what data the machine is pulling, how it's coming to its decision-making, and we don't have a lot of transparency around that at the moment.
No.
So I think, I mean, there's a big drive towards putting an ethical framework
Do you want to get
around
on that?
That?
Like health insurance and, you know, access?
Yes. Well, I heard a terrifying story. I don't know if it's true or do you want to hear it? Really?
Yeah,
it's tech pessimist. And it was actually someone I know, and I was like, you're an absolute crackpot. But I went away and thought about it. And I was like, well, I didn't say he was a crackpot, but I was thinking it. I said, you need to register for this event. And he said, oh, okay, can I just let you know? So I was on Eventbrite, just register. He's like, I don't use Eventbrite. So they're taking my details and this guy's, you know, a PhD student in machine learning. So I was like, all right. I said, I'm interested. Why not? And he's like, well, I don't want to give away my data and things like that. And we sort of got into this dialogue about it. And somehow it ended up at Google. And he said, you know, he said, when you move your mouse, Google have built a system that can track your wrist movements on your mouse over a number of years, and if it detects a change in the pattern of the way you manipulate your mouse, it can detect early onset of Parkinson's or issues that may be causing the mouse to shake or something like that. He said they will get a kickback from your health provider to go back and tell them that they've detected early pattern detection in the movement of your hand.
Yeah.
Your health insurer will update your policy and say, hey, you're such a great customer. We're offering you this great new deal. And people are going, yay, whoopee, without reading through it. No, but there is an exclusion built in there against Parkinson's, for example. And I was like, oh, what a load of crap. And then I thought, you know, it's probably going that way. And again, it's there is a lot of unethical behaviour in AI and machine learning. Like, I'm not disputing that. But I think we're aware of that. Look, it's a huge issue.
But
huge
it's so embedded, though,
isn't it? So embedded and so complicated. And yes, this is very contentious, but it's like climate change. You know, you're going up against big business and people want information. You know, data is money now. Like, all money is in data. Qantas, for example, doesn't make nearly as much money out of its flights as it does out of its frequent flyer program. Like, that's where the majority of its revenue come from. They on-sell the data
good money,
and they use it.
Yep.
So they get money for those points and then they can hang on to it. And it's, I think it's like something between 6 and 9 months before people redeem their points.
Yeah.
So Qantas is raking it in. You know, I'm not criticising. I'm just saying data is money and we're giving it away.
Yes.
Now, I personally am not particularly phased about that at this stage of my life, but I might be in the future and it is a concern.
Yeah, definitely. My sons and my son's mates, they sell their data. So they just do it. They figure it's going to get collected anyway. They might as well profit themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
not
dissimilar to going up to Green Hill Road and going to a little focus group.
Yeah.
You're just like, and here, follow me for 6 months and give me $200. So
I've got a friend whose sister has severe anxiety and she doesn't leave the house, but she's getting a reasonable wage in vouchers from online surveys.
Yeah.
You know, like 500 plus a week.
I've seen those ads.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I get hooked occasionally and go, oh, I have my details. I know. Optimist, that's me.
That's good for you. I'm not. I'm pretty much one step away from paranoid.
I know. Well, I'm probably just worse than that. I was trying to be positive here.
No.
I do think there are so many positives. I genuinely do. Like, it has the capacity to, you know, automate things that people don't want to do, augment jobs. You know. And
so what are your final thoughts? What are the final thoughts for, where do you see the future for us?
Oh, that's another big, how do you wind up on
that?
That's
a Friday. Look, go for it.
I mean, I'm a I call myself a tech optimist and I'm just generally an optimist in life and I see the good side of everything. And I suppose I'm driven by this utopian vision of a world where diversity and equity and transparency abounds. I know in my workplace we're doing absolutely 100% the right thing. Like, our research takes into consideration ethics, transparency, where the data is pulled from, like how the machines make their decisions. We're driven a lot, but we do a lot in medical imaging. We do a lot in human services. We do, you know, we do a great deal of good work. And of course, they put me on, and my role is to promote the importance of humans in a technological world and ensure that humanity is retained. I just think probably final thoughts is that humans are not going to be superseded because we have unique traits that cannot be replicated. We can use AI and machine learning to augment, but I don't see it superseding.
Okay, well, I'll be hopeful because
very sceptical.
I am sceptical because I think
I'm sunshine and roses.
I know, but humans just don't appreciate how much value there is in being a human. But with that, it's a Friday afternoon.
It
let's
is.
Not get too heavy.
I value you as a human.
I value you too.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
All right, final three questions before we let you
hang on, you just said that was my final thought.
All right, I'm a robot. All right, banana or strawberries?
Strawberries.
Strawberries?
Mm.
Which type? Like,
ones without needles in them.
Don't you call me. It's never too soon. Ford or a Holden girl?
My last car before the one I have now was a Holden.
Yeah.
And it was a POS.
POS, what's that? Oh.
Terrible.
Okay, and last one. Are you a get up early or a sleep in type of gal?
No, get up.
Get up, see the world.
It's all over by 7 p.m, but I'm up at 5.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure spending some time with you down here down at Featherstone Place.
Featherstone Place is amazing and the studio is awesome. What's the name of the business?
This is Basement Enterprise.
Basement Enterprise. Big plug for Basement Enterprise.
We plug them all the time.
Good. All the plugging.
And on that note, on behalf of me, all of us here and Sarah Connors all around the world, thank you very much, Ali Anderson.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening in today. We look forward to you joining us next time.